If it's a sports story you're talking about, you can guarantee they'll be talking about it. Unless it's something like arena football. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
It's Sportsnet Magazine Live. In for Ben Ennis this morning, I'm Jeff Sammet, alongside Dave Zarum and Craig Battle, who, as coincidence would have it, work for Sportsnet Magazine. That's a fantastic plan that comes together. Guys, thanks for coming in. Appreciate it.
Of course. Looking forward to this.
So, right off the bat, because we're going to cover everything that's been, the week that's been, and of course the busy weekend that's going to be. We got Stanley Cup playoffs we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about the Toronto Blue Jays. You guys cool with talking Raptors off the top? Is that okay? Is that right up your wheelhouse? Is that all right?
If we have to.
You can pull that off? No. At least for a few minutes? A
couple of minutes.
That's all right? All right, good. All these guys, we've been here an hour, just hanging. Yeah. They will not stop talking about the NBA playoffs. Save it for the show, guys. Save it for the show.
We're all used up, man. We got nothing left.
We should have taped the past hour and just run that. Well, let's redo that all over again. Okay, let's start with the NBA playoffs. And, of course, today, Wizards and Raptors kick off the NBA playoffs and do so in town here at the ACC. All right, so going into this one, how did you guys feel about this matchup, going up against the Washington Wizards, dropping down to the fourth seed, and getting the Washington Wizards? I mean, from a personal standpoint, I was looking at this and saying, hey, they beat these guys every time out this year, so exactly. It's good with me.
Yeah, I mean, going into it, you know, when the choice was Washington or Milwaukee, every step of the way, I said that I preferred Washington. Milwaukee comes with more question marks, a little more like intrigue. The matchup, I think, is a lot more difficult. Whereas Washington, you said it, they have the track record against them. I don't think Washington's that great of a team. They have a lot of flaws that I think the Raptors are in a good position to exploit. So I think the way the chips fell is going to turn out to be pretty advantageous for Toronto.
One thing about that 3-0 record, though, for the Raptors over the Wizards this year is that two of those games were at home here in Toronto, and two of them were decided by like five total points. One was an overtime game, mm-hmm. and one was a late game bucket that DeRozan scored. Wall had a really good look at his shot. So those games weren't blowouts. They had one blowout way back in November. But at this point in the season, that's ancient history. Those two, you know, like Beal wasn't playing. That's a totally different season, pretty much, right?
I wonder, though, if it is ancient history, you know, because there's got to be something to be said for the Washington Wizards just walking away from those three games going, we just can't beat these guys. And mm-hmm. and it's seven of the last eight as well. It's not just the last three games from this past year. There's got to be that mental edge that maybe the Wizards do not have against the Toronto Raptors.
Yeah, I mean, I'd imagine so, you know. Battle, your point about them being without Beal for most of those games, I think that is a good statement in the sense that he played one game against the Raptors and mm-hmm. he dropped 26 points, I think it was, which is top 10.
Five threes.
Yeah, so he's in the top 10 for opponent scoring averages against Toronto this season. Yeah, and five threes, so he can exploit them that way. But you got to imagine, like, on the mental side of it, you know, granted, things change in the playoffs and you do get to kind of hit that refresh button. It's a different style of play, one that probably actually favors Washington in terms of slowing it down, relying on your bigs a little bit more, getting to the basket a little bit more. But still, in the big picture, I mean, I just think the Raptors have had their number, and the formula with which they've beaten the Wizards is something that I think they can undoubtedly repeat over the next week or two.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Craig, a lot of people that I've talked to, and, you know, opening up with phones, experts, and talking about who could potentially be the matchup for the Toronto Raptors in the mm-hmm. playoffs. And talking about the Washington Wizards, everybody says the same thing. They go, John Wall scares me. John Wall absolutely scares me. I mean, is it a case of you go into this series and say, all right, John Wall's going to do what he's going to do. Let's just stop everybody else. Or is there a recipe for defending John Wall?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, John Wall will get his because he's a fantastic player. He's totally grown in his time, and that's kind of testament to Randy Whitman. Randy Whitman really helped him out a lot when he came in and took over the coaching reins of that team. So John Wall will get his, and they have to acknowledge that, yeah, he might average 20 this series. He's great. He's good on the driving kick. But I think you want to also try to just get the ball out of his hands as much as possible. So you want to be able to collapse. You don't want your bigs falling asleep and letting John Wall, because he's going to break down perimeter defense. There's no way that they're going to, you know, Kyle Lowry, Grievous Vasquez, Lou aren't going to stay in front of him all series. It's just not going to happen, right? So he's going to break them down. He's going to get in the paint. And what he really likes to do from that point is look outside. He doesn't necessarily think bucket first.
And that's one thing I think the Raptors actually have going for them, is when you look at the guys who Wall is going to be driving to, because I agree, he's going to get past that first line of defense just because of who the Raptors personnel mm-hmm. is. I also think, regardless of who John Wall plays, he's so good that he's going to tear up any opponent. But it's like you said, he's going to get to the basket and then look to kick out. Mm-hmm. But who's he going to pass it to? Who's going to reliably hit that three outside of Beal?
Mm-hmm. And that's a problem for the Warriors. It's something that they struggled with all season. They struggled with more as the season went on, as people got the book on them. You wind up with a lot of actions in this offense, creating a lot of sort of misdirection and stuff like that. It doesn't actually go anywhere, and it winds up just being Wall, you know, heading into the teeth of the defense, mm-hmm. Awaiting defense, and kicking out to a guy like Nene for a long, like, 20-foot jumper, which it isn't his shot. It's not necessarily anybody's shot. Like, it's a shot you can get in the early part of the shot clock anytime you want, and you don't take it because it's a stupid shot. But if, for whatever reason, they do this a lot, where they get John Wall into the defense, and he has options of bad three-point shooters or Nene. Mm. So they also tend to take that shot just too much in general, right? Like, they don't take a ton of threes. They take a lot of long twos, which a lot of teams have decided is one of the least efficient shots in basketball. But there you go. They wind up taking a lot of them, and they don't hit them efficiently. It's not like there's a grandiose reason that they do this, or a smart reason for them shooting that. They take a lot of them, and they don't hit them at a good clip.
That's Craig Battle with Dave Zarum. I'm Jeff Sammet of Sportsnet Magazine, live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Dave, DeMar DeRozan, the NBA named him as Toronto Raptors guard Eastern Conference Player of the Month for April. And DeRozan led all Eastern Conference players for the month, averaging 24.1 points in seven games.
Tied with Steph Curry.
There you go. That's high praise mm-hmm. To both mm-hmm. of them. Is this the best you've seen out of DeMar DeRozan ever?
No question. I mean, specifically March and April, or even like the last month, I think it's the best basketball he's played in his career so far. And it's not just the points, it's the way he's distributing the ball. I think the decision making, especially late in shot clock situations, like you're talking about with Washington or late in the quarter. Mm-hmm. I mean, that Lou Williams three against Miami
right.
last weekend, two weekends ago, comes to mind as an example of that. So I think when you kind of put everything together for DeMar right now, he's definitely playing at the highest level he's played at, which is obviously crucial for the Raptors, because this guy, you know, as much as we like to talk about Kyle Lowry, I truly believe that at this point in the season, and with everything that we've seen the last month or so, DeRozan is the most important guy on this team. For this playoff series, it's going to fall on DeRozan. If he can do what he's done in the last month in the series, the Raptors are that much more unstoppable, you know. And Lowry, I think he's still coming back from that injury. I think he'll be obviously good to go today just because of the nature of who he is. But if they have DeRozan doing the scoring 25 a game, but also getting the rebounds and the assists, he's been averaging over a steal a game as well. His defense has been really solid. I think he's going to be absolutely the difference maker here.
No offense to Kyle Lowry, Craig, but is DeMar DeRozan's play of late due in some part to the fact that Kyle Lowry wasn't around? Maybe some inflated stats because he's getting the ball a bit more. And again, this is not a knock on Lowry,
no.
Or am I implying that DeMar DeRozan is a better player without Kyle Lowry? But just looking at this small little sample, is this partly due to Kyle Lowry's absence?
I don't know. Like, I think there's something that he takes on a greater leadership role when Kyle Lowry is out. And he's definitely, you know, if you want to call Lowry 1A in terms of the team's leadership, then DeRozan is 1B. It's kind of a nice pairing. They've got a intense mutual respect that those guys have. So I think, yeah, like, taking on a little bit more of that as the season went on. And I think the entire team at this point acknowledges that Kyle Lowry was working overtime during that patch that DeRozan was out, right? Mm-hmm. So them shutting Lowry down, like giving him a little bit of rest, letting him sort of, you know, attend to some injuries, I think did offer DeRozan the opportunity to just sort of distribute the ball a little bit more and take that on as a role. Like in the past, he was knocked as being just a scorer, but that was his role on the team, right? Like you had him playing next to guys like Jose Calderon, right? who never looked for their own shot and were always looking to set guys up. So it wasn't DeRozan's job to be a secondary playmaker. His job was to score the basketball. Mm-hmm. So you saw it right when DeRozan came back from injury the first time, and then it kind of went away. But when the game slows down for DeRozan, when he basically is sort of looking at other guys, looking for opportunities, you know, like that's so sort of slow-footed Euro step towards the hoop, he can make good passes. He's a good passer. He's becoming a much better passer than he was in his early career. And so I think, yeah, having that little extra responsibility is no problem for him. And I think that they can integrate those two guys. Like, that's not going to stop now that Lowry's back and will be playing 35-plus minutes a game.
And the team is something like 18-6 or something like that when DeRozan gets five or more assists this season. Mm-hmm. That might not be the exact number, but they're way better when he is distributing. And the other thing about him is because of his style of play, I think in the playoffs, it's that much more effective. You know, he's one of the elite guys, like truly elite for his position, especially at getting to the free throw line. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a great way to manage the clock in these kind of intense playoff games. It's just a great weapon. His mid-range game, the way he's able to post up other guards, like I think we're going to see him abuse Bradley Beal in that kind of like high post area once he gets him down there. So I think there's a lot of ways where DeRozan can be effective in this series.
And I think you brought up a good point. One of the things that separates these teams on offense is they're both jump shooting teams and both can live or die, you know, on long shots, mm-hmm. which isn't something that you really want going for your team heading into the playoffs. But the Raptors do something that the Wizards don't, and that's their guards get to the line. Between Lou Will and Lowry and DeRozan, they get to the line a ton, and they get a lot of points, a lot of reliable game-to-game points there. So even if they're not shooting terribly well, like we saw Lou Williams have some bad shooting nights this year, but make up for it by shooting 10 free throws and nailing 9 of them.
Yeah, and if these guys are getting to the line, in theory, that should help their defense as well, because it slows things down, it gets them set up. And again, that's in theory, because I'm like, not sure we've witnessed that as much as we would have liked.
A lot of times those are almost like mini timeout scenarios for a coach, right?
Yeah.
Get a chance to bark some orders or make sure everyone's on the same page. Yeah.
Craig, a moment ago you mentioned ball distribution, and I thought of Jonas Valanciunas, and it's been a storyline all year to varying degrees as to how much JV is getting the ball. And I remember talking to Alvin Williams about this, it felt like about a few weeks ago, and asked him if JV was getting the ball enough or asking for the ball enough. He didn't feel that was the case. Is it the case now where we see JV, and I'm not saying that the offensive possession necessarily, guys, has to end at JV, but that the ball is going through him. Is the offense moving the ball as much as they should and through their big men?
I don't know. You know, it's something that there were games this season where you saw JV look fantastic, you know, like especially early in the first quarters of some games, you know, he's 4-5, he's 5-5, he's got 10 points all of a sudden as the quarter turns over, and then you wouldn't see him in the second, and then he'd come back out and he wouldn't get the ball in the third, and you just kind of wondered what was going on. The ball doesn't tend to come out of his hands a lot, so I think when the opposing defenses load up on JV, when they decide, okay, well, we're just not going to let you make that entry pass, we're going to make it really hard, we're going to push him out of the box, he becomes less of an option just because he's not that willing a passer. At least it doesn't seem like he's that willing a passer at this point of his career.
Lowry had like an amazing quote about that a couple days ago where he got a kick out pass from JV once the double team come, and he said he's been waiting for that pass for 3 years now.
So, which is amazing, right? I mean, like there's so many strides that JV has made. You know, his hands are better. His footwork's getting better. He's more aggressive going to the hoop. His shooting percentage is you know, all NBA level. I mean, that's, you know, top 10 kind of thing in the league, which is fantastic. But there's also holes in his game. He's still not necessarily the best rotator on defense. He's not a great willing
player. And that's what's going to make the big difference between whether or not he stays on the floor during this series, is that help defense, like what you're talking about, especially with this matchup. Because the one thing the Wizards have going for them is they do have a solid rotation of bigs. Mm-hmm. Who can get Jonas in foul trouble, who can exploit him and force Casey to go with the Patterson-Johnson or even Patterson-Hansbrough kind of combination. Mm-hmm. So a lot is riding on Valanciunas here, because it's a great matchup for him if he can kind of keep everything in order, for lack of a better way to say
it. And we mentioned it before that Washington is a great, or I'm not sure if we did, but they're a great defensive rebounding team. Between Nene and Gortat and Chris Humphreys, they're coming off the bench.
Yeah.
They rebound the ball really well. So they need JV in there to stem that tide. If they want to get their own defensive rebounds and keep the ball going the opposite way, they need JV in there. But we talked before about John Wall getting into the teeth of the paint. And can that second level of defense be there waiting for him? And that would be JV's job. And that's something that JV would need to be cognizant of all the time. Like he needs to know where his man is. He needs to know where Nene or Gortat is, whether they're rolling to the hoop, or they're sneaking back door, and he needs to know where Wall is.
And that's something that he's struggled with,
yep,
you know, over the course of the season.
Dave, Amir Johnson. Is he good to go? Is he healthy? He's got the bum ankle for the last little while.
I don't think he'll ever, at least this season, be, 100%. But,
I don't even think in the offseason he's 100%.
Yeah, exactly. I think his max capacity is 85, maybe. but because of his character, because of kind of what he brings, he's gonna play through it. That's kind of the MO on Amir, and the guys are gonna feed off of that. I think he'll be good to go. You're certainly gonna get a maximum effort from the guy.
But are we gonna see Craig in these playoffs? That four position as being, the big problem for the Toronto Raptors, because we talk about, going into the offseason, we talk about, well, if they're going to improve at any one position, you got to think that focal point number one for Masai Ujiri is going to be improving on the four position. Do you think that over the course of the playoffs, however long it's going to be, that we'll see that area exposed for the Toronto Raptors?
I don't think so. I mean, between Amir and Patrick Patterson, they do things that are going to give Washington trouble, right? Amir Johnson is one of the premier help defenders and pick and roll defenders that the Eastern Conference especially has. So I feel like Amir's offensive numbers are going to go up and down as the playoffs go on, depending on, rest and how he's feeling and stuff like that. But he does a lot of really good things on the floor. So unless, barring a genuine breakdown of the ankle or another injury or something like that that prevents him from doing just about anything, I think he can help you out in a variety of ways on multiple nights.
And also, I mean, Patrick Patterson, if he's got it going from the beyond the 3-point line, Washington doesn't have the kind of forwards who can defend out there on the perimeter. I mean, they can maybe put an Otto Porter on him or something like that, but I don't see Nene chasing him out to Patterson out to the 3-point line.
Yeah.
But the guy we're forgetting about is Tyler Hansbrough. I mean, he's played really well over the last
three weeks. Yeah.
No, how could you?
Well, he's had to sub in for Amir Johnson in the starting lineup. He's been fine.
But he's been more than fine. He's dropped 18, 20, 15. He's gotten double-digit rebounds in every start except for one. He's just been really reliable. A lot of the times earlier in the season, I think one of the frustrating things about watching him play was he'd make a great cut to the basket or make a smart play, put himself in a good opportunity, receive a nice pass, and then kind of flub the basket or mm-hmm. miss a dunk or whatever. Mm. And he's finishing a lot of those shots more now. And I just think, Casey has shown a lot of faith in Hansbrough over the last month. And you have to believe that that's going to translate into the playoffs. I mean, we talked about it on my NBA podcast called Free Association. And that's a shameless plug. We talked about whether or not Hansbrough is going to be stealing James Johnson's minutes in the playoffs just because of the way Casey seems to prefer going with Hansbrough over Johnson, going with reliability over rolling the dice a little bit.
And overall shortening the bench.
Yeah. And that's part of it too. So someone's going to be the odd man out. We would have all assumed a couple months ago that Hansbrough would certainly be a guy glued to the bench now, but I think that's changed. And you're going to see enough of him to make an impact in this series. And I think it just strengthens that four spot that you're talking about. Mm-hmm.
It's Dave Zarum with Craig Battle. I'm Jeff Sambit, Sportsnet 590 The Fan here in Toronto on the Sportsnet Radio Network. It's Sportsnet Magazine Live. Well, you mentioned James Johnson, Dave, but Craig, what kind of role do you think James Johnson is going to play here? Because we've seen over the course of the season, hey, this guy looks like he should be a starter. And now we don't see him for five games or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. What kind of role does he play here?
I think what you guys said before about him being the odd man out is accurate. I think he's going to play less than maybe perhaps a lot of us would like to see. I mean, last year, Terrence Ross scored 5 points a game in the playoffs and kind of generally just did it a bit of a disappearing act, right? And it seems that
Until the last minute of game seven.
Until the last minute of game seven when he came up big. There you go. So I need a little bit more out of my starting small forward than a minute in game seven, but yeah. I guess I'll take that.
Yeah.
So he's a starting small forward moving forward. Because he has spacing, right? Like, you know,
you're talking about Ross.
Talking about Ross. He's the starting small forward going forward because he shoots the three ball well. And you know, teams respect that. But I think James Johnson just does so many nice things on the floor, and I would love to see him more in that late game. We need one stop. They're going to hand the ball to Paul Pierce and have him go do some stuff. I don't want to see Terrence Ross or DeMar DeRozan trying to defend that, because that's not their best. That's not their forte. You know, they're not a defensive stopper. Nobody's going to sort of go, yeah, one on one, this guy's the guy you want on that shot. James Johnson is that guy.
Yeah.
He's quick. He's strong. He can stay in front of you. He's got good defensive principles. And there were a bunch of times this year we saw Grievous Vasquez in that role or Terrence Ross in that role, because of the way, you know, Casey saw the game going prior to that. And I want to see more James Johnson in that role. Like, I'd love it if, you know, ends of quarters, ends of games, that he is doing that. You know, like, we want him on the ball handler, no matter who the ball handler is. I pretty much want him on John Wall or Bradley Beal, depending on who gets the ball at the top of the key and who's going to try to break you down. I want James Johnson there.
But I think it comes down to trust, you know, and I don't think Casey has that kind of same trust in James Johnson that the rest of us might.
Right.
You know, because I'm with you. Like, he's the only guy on this roster who you can sick on a guy like John Wall and expect good results from.
Yeah, he's athletic. He can move.
Yep.
He can guard multiple positions. And he's like, tenacious isn't the word, but he impacts opponents. I mean, Hansbrough does that as well. You know, he takes opponents out of their game. But James Johnson does it in an entirely different way, where I think he almost like intimidates them out of their game. Like, he's just really tough, and he's just like, he does not back down. And I think that that really can throw up some opponents off, you know, when they expect a guy to do one thing and he does the complete opposite. So he's a total X factor in every sense of the word, but it's just a matter of whether or not Casey entrusts him on, I think it's mostly on the offensive end of the floor. When he gets the ball in his hands, I think Casey kind of freaks out a little bit because of some of the decisions he makes. And that's the only thing that's going to keep him off the floor, because on paper, it seems like he's a guy who could be really effective in this series.
Dave, I think we talked about it a couple of days ago, and Craig, I wanted to bring it up with you. I was talking to Paul Jones about this a couple of weeks ago, and Jonesy was saying, this is your team. This is an offensive team. Mm-hmm. This is a team that relies on their offense, that wins ball games because of their offense. Might not, you know, Dwayne Casey might not like that, and he has to continue preaching defense as he is a defensive head coach. So that message has to keep being hammered home. Don't stop doing that, Dwayne Casey. But let's just be real about this team. This is an offensive team that is not the defensive team they once were. Do you kind of go into this series, going into this playoffs, just accept that about the Toronto Raptors?
They are who they are. They're not going to immediately overnight change who they, how they play the game or how well they play defense. And I think this time last year, they were sort of trending upwards. They were a surprisingly decent defensive team sort of towards the end of last year. And this year, pretty much wall to wall, they've been subpar. They've, you know, giving up over 100 points a game for the season. So you kind of have to accept that they're not going to morph into the Chicago Bulls overnight. You know, they're not going to have, you know, two twin towers back there waiting. They're not going to have massive shot blockers. But I think, you know, shortening the rotation probably helps a little bit in that way, just that everybody will have a better idea of who they're playing with moment to moment and where everybody's going to go. I think that will help the familiarity of the playoffs. Going forward, I think they could improve their defensive acumen a little bit, and, you know, they'll know their opponents quite well by the end of this thing. So, you know, you'd hope that they could tighten things up and they can make adjustments as the series goes on. And then, yeah, just we said it before, if they can keep Wall passing to guys and then, you know, not allow Bradley Beal to be the guy standing by himself in the corner too much, that I think they could do quite well here. And then considering that Washington is no offensive juggernaut, in the first round, you'd sure hope that, you know, they can keep the messages simple and repeatable.
Well, Wizards and Raptors, they start their series at 12:30 tip. And if you're heading out to Maple Leaf Square or wondering when it opens, it opened an hour ago ahead of game one. So go out to Jurassic Park, go and enjoy.
I hear it's already filling up.
It's already filling up, huh?
Yeah,
I'm a little too old for that. I got to be honest with you. Like the days of me going out and just standing there forever, it's not going to happen. I need a recliner.
Your festival concert days are over?
They are. They are. I'm not doing it. But hey, I encourage everybody to go out there because it looks like a lot of fun if you're into that sort
Beautiful
of thing.
Beautiful day for it, too. I remember last year it was like rainy. Cold and rainy.
Yeah, they picked a good day for it.
No excuse not to show up.
Now. NBA playoffs picked a good day for the Toronto Raptors to get together and start their series against the Washington Wizards. There are other series that are happening in the NBA playoffs, some of which are being played today. Guys, let's look around to the East as well. Milwaukee, Chicago, Craig, as you mentioned Chicago a few moments ago. Just kind of looking ahead and getting some picks and what you guys are expecting out of that series. Craig, let's start with you. Milwaukee, Chicago.
I feel like it's going to be an ugly, ugly series. You're going to see some 85-75 games. Both teams are great. Pretty great defensively. I think the Bulls are a level up, but Milwaukee actually causes a lot of problems for teams just because they've got a lot of long defenders. They can hassle anybody on the perimeter really well. They recover well. One thing's, you know, not to harp too much on the Raptors, but they've got a system where they really want to pester guys on the perimeter, and they want to trap and they want to do a lot of that. Milwaukee has a similar modus operandi, but they can handle it better because, you know, Michael Carter-Williams is like 6'7", 6'6", right? Yeah. Long arms, you know, Chris Middleton. They've got a lot of guys who can, the Greek Freak.
John Henson.
They got crazy long arms, and they're athletic, and they can really mess you up on the perimeter. So, you know, Jimmy Butler's going to have a hard time with that. Derrick Rose is going to have a hard time with that. They've got guys long enough to handle Nikola Mirotic out there, right? They're a good defensive team. They just struggle to score the ball. They don't have the shooting that matches their defensive talents. So they're gonna have trouble on that end, and they're gonna give Chicago trouble on the other end. So I feel like Chicago's talent wins out in this one, but that it'll be a grind.
Yeah, it'll be a series. And Dave, perhaps it's flashbacks of the Raptors' first round loss against the Nets last year, where I'm looking at Jason Kidd behind the bench or in front of the bench or walking alongside the bench for the Milwaukee Bucks
somewhere in the area,
and I'm going, oh geez, I don't want to face that guy.
Yeah, I mean, they won 15 games last year. And you look at this year, I mean, yeah, they got Jabari Parker, but he hasn't played for them. I mean, he's done an amazing job with them. And it's another reason why I thought Washington was a preferable matchup than to Milwaukee, because Randy Whitman's a terrible coach and Jason Kidd's proving to be a very good coach. I think he's the only coach who's in his first year with two separate teams, won 40 games and took him to the playoffs. Something like that. Don't quote me on that. But I like Milwaukee in the series. I mean, it's going to be a huge upset, but I wouldn't be completely shocked if they did pull it off, because Chicago's been really up and down, I find. And while they do have the experience and they are built for playoff basketball, I think this Milwaukee team is also built for playoff basketball. The only thing they don't have in their favor is the experience. But you know, we see upsets every once in a while, and I think this is one where you could see them kind of pull that off.
I don't think, guys, that we'll see an upset with the Celtics and the Cavs. Craig Battle, how many games do you think the Seas can take against the Cavs, if any?
They've been really hot. They've been a much better team in the second half, but I don't think they have the talent to beat the Cavs. I give them maybe one game. The first game back in Boston, that crowd will be completely nuts. I mean, when you look at that Celtics roster, who's your big star? Who's your playoff performer? Who's going to get the ball in the end of the game? Is it Evan Turner? Are you going to trust Marcus Smart with that ball? Like, I don't know. Like, they've got decent pieces, and they've got a fantastic coach, Brad Stevens, former Butler coach. Amazing tactician, you know, play to play. Pundits are saying he's one of the best like in-game coaches in the league.
And I mean, when you look at that roster, it reads like a tanking team or like a lottery team. And the reason they're in the playoffs, guys like Thomas and even Evan Turner have stepped up a lot. But it's because of Brad Stevens. I mean, he might be the coach of the year because of what he's done with this roster.
Right, but they don't have an answer for LeBron James, who does, and especially not the Boston Celtics, who, you know, like a month ago were like 10 games under 500, right? Yeah. You know,
clearly you haven't seen Jonas Jerebko play defense.
He's quite the guy. The Timofey Mozgov trade, where they traded away two first-round picks in January, really solidified that team. Everyone was worried what was going to happen after they lost Anderson Varejao again. But Mozgov has a fantastic chemistry with LeBron. Basically, he plays great defense. He gets boards. He protects the paint, and he dunks balls. He's got a great I think, yeah, something like he scored like 200 buckets since coming to them. And then like 75% of them were assisted, like a quarter of them were assisted from LeBron. There was a great highlight this week where LeBron grabbed a steal and then did a behind-the-back bounce pass along the baseline to a guy who probably shouldn't even have been looking for the ball.
That was cool.
That was an amazing highlight. Yeah. Like, just like everything about that. The fact that LeBron throws it, the fact that Mozgov's even paying attention.
Mozgov had to pay attention. But that was his role there.
LeBron was facing like the sideline baseline. There's no way anybody should be expecting that ball. So
great.
Yeah, and then you've got Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love. Like, the spacing will be fantastic. They'll give the Celtics a lot of trouble. I do, you know, respect the Celtics medal, and that they'll sneak one or maybe two.
Great Pink Floyd album.
Yeah, there you go. Let's go very quickly around the rest of the series because time is the enemy, and I'm glad we're gonna just kind of gloss over the Nets Hawks because that's the series I'm interested in the least. Yeah, exactly. We're good. Yeah. All right, good. All right, look, that's good enough. Hawks, yeah.
Hawks
we'll
win.
See you in the second
Hawks
round.
Yeah.
All right, so over in the Western Conference, New Orleans, Golden State. I want Golden State to be there in the end.
I want Anthony Davis to steal some games here and at least make it close.
Yeah,
which I think is totally possible. Yeah. It's hard to go against the Warriors, the best offense and the best defense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Anthony Davis finished on a really high note. Going out against the Spurs, a team that was actually trying to win so they could secure the second seed, wound up losing and get the sixth seed. That was a Spurs team in playoff mode, and the Pelicans gave them a ton of trouble and won it on the last end of the season. So they're a team that can do things. They're a team that has talent. Tyreke Evans has been playing incredibly well. Like, I don't think they'll beat the Golden State Warriors, who this season, won 67 games. Steph Curry, Dave's trying to get in here. What?
No, I was just saying, like, for Davis, though, like, it's not about winning the series. It's about kind of taking that first step in the evolution of you as a superstar player and getting into the playoffs and getting that playoff experience is a big part of that.
Yeah, this is...
That's the goal here, I think, for that.
Absolutely. Mavs, Rockets. These two teams go head-to-head quite a bit.
You know, I was the only one on SportsSense panel that picked the Rockets to win this, which kind of confused me.
Yeah.
The other guys probably know something I don't. To me, it seems like who's going to stop James Harden on this Mavs team? I like the Mavs. I like Dirk. I like Monte Ellis. I like their guys. I think Rondo's a terrible fit there. And again, they're not going to be able to stop James Harden. So that's end of the story for me.
I think on the other side, you have Rick Carlisle.
Fair enough.
Yeah, he's a great coach in seven games. You know, like, he can make adjustments as well as anybody in the league. They're a few years removed from that finals team. But they have Tyson Chandler back, and they've still got Dirk, and Dirk's still playing at a fantastically high level. I kind of agree with Dave that I don't buy the Rondo Monte Ellis backcourt.
Yeah.
It's they both thrive with the ball in their hands, and Rondo doesn't space the floor. They can go under every screen if they want. That team doesn't fit super well for me. Their offense was number one in the league before Rondo shows up, and now it's sort of middle pack, you know.
Dave, expectations at Trailblazers and Grizzlies.
I wish the Trailblazers could make a go of it because I really like watching Lillard play. And, you know, we saw last year how he can hit a clutch shot or two. But I think Memphis has the edge. You know, they can do enough to stop LaMarcus Aldridge with their bigs. And Marc Gasol is just too much to handle.
And Spurs, Clippers, Craig, I can't believe we're seeing this in the first round.
Oh, amazing. It's a would have been Western Conference final potential. Had things broken differently with the seeding, but here we get it in the first round. Two amazing teams playing at an extremely high level. You know, good coaches, great point guards, great systems, you know, like offensive fireworks. Just, yeah, like NBA legends on both sides. It's great.
NBA playoffs. Yep.
I think we're going to see Kawhi Leonard shut down Chris Paul at some point.
That would be amazing. He's quite the defensive perimeter marvel.
It's going to be a brilliant series. I hope it goes seven.
That's probably the marquee one of
a
bunch.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. That's why it's at the end of this discussion and also in the scheduling as far as games one go. That's happening late Sunday night. NBA playoffs is going to be a lot of fun. And again, Raptors hosting the Wizards at 12:30 tip. Head down to the ACC. As we continue Sportsnet Magazine Live, we'll have a quick look at the Toronto Blue Jays. Already, we're talking about a Jose Reyes injury. Surprised face, that's Dave Zarum. That's Craig Battle. I'm Jeff Sambit on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
There's a line drive hit deep to center field. Cameron Maven going way back, looking up. There she goes. kid has done it again. Number 29 hits home plate, claps his hands, and the Blue Jays are in flight here, 1-0.
Devin Travis with a leadoff home run. It's Sportsnet Magazine Live with Dave Zarum and Craig Battle. I'm Jeff Sammet on the Sportsnet Radio Network. And guys, Devin Travis having to lead things off because Jose Reyes has a rib issue. He's got a cracked rib. So they're hoping that he can avoid a stint on the disabled list, but that remains to be seen. We'll see how the weekend goes. Here's the thing. And here's what I was wondering, and this is what we often do in sport. We second-guess the manager, the coach, what have you. But I thought we'd see Jose Reyes rested a game a week. He'd be DHing some. And there's no Ryan Goins, but did that kind of take you by surprise as well? And maybe second-guessing? Dave, first off with you, that Jose Reyes hadn't had a break yet?
Well, certainly. I mean, for a lot of reasons. One, you know he's a guy who's injury prone. You know he's like a glass ready to be broken or just waiting to be broken. So you got to use kid gloves to begin with. But also, I mean, we saw it in the first series this year in New York. He was kind of, you know, I remember him going for an at-bat. It was maybe the second game of the season where he was kind of clutching his side. And everyone was saying, you know, he's clearly hurt. Are they going to take him out of the game? No, they're going to keep him in this game. Okay, fine. And then when you hear that, you expect them to at least give him some rest for the following game or maybe at some point in that Baltimore series. So the fact that, like, you knew something was up, you knew he was a little hurt, why risk it at all with a guy who you know is so susceptible to injuries and so important to your team, you know? So I'm shocked that they didn't give him rest him a couple of days before.
But I think it just sort of points to a lack of depth on the team. Is, you know, last night they had to call Goins up, and Goins is there. He's playing shortstop. And Goins isn't an offensive player for you. Like, he can adequately play as the utility infielder.
Oh, he's an exceptional defender.
There you go. Exactly. Yeah.
But that's what keeps him on the team. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he plays his position really well, but he's batting what 200 or something right now. He's not gonna hit the ball.
He's got no stick. But the Blue Jays electing to go with an 8-man bullpen, you know, because of the likes of Hendricks and Redmond not having options. So they make this move now, and you know, I guess you go in saying, all right, well, we can't have Goins because we want to have that 8-man bullpen. So we'll go for the first few weeks with Reyes playing every day as he used to do. But then after that, when we have the flexibility of Goins being on the roster, then we can rest him a day or two a week and see how that goes. And maybe that was the logic going into the year, but here we are. We look at Jose Reyes and possibly going on the DL. You know, guy, frankly, the way I think you got to deal with Jose Reyes now, with him being 30 years old, with him being injury prone, he's missed a ton of games over the course of 2+ years with the Toronto Blue Jays. You have to treat him like he's a 38-year-old guy.
Yeah, you don't let him go 2 series without sitting out a game kind of deal.
Yeah.
Throw him on the DH,
Yeah, DH him a little bit if you have to.
Yeah, his injury history is piled up. If it wasn't the rib, if it wasn't the oblique, something else is gonna happen to him, whether it's been a freak injury or just a lingering thing. You know, he's had ankle injuries, and he's had multiple hamstrings, calf, oblique. You know, this is a guy you need to, like you said, treat with kid gloves. You know, you need to make sure that there's a backup plan, and I don't think they came into the season with one. So they were just looking at the alternate options and they said, we got to play him.
Because he's not an expendable part on this team.
No.
I mean, that's
a key piece.
It's obvious, but he's a key piece. There's so much he does, you know, out in the field and at the plate, that if this team's going to, you know, reach their goals of taking a sniff at the postseason, he's going to have to be a huge part of that. So, yeah, so I don't understand why you don't take every chance with him, every precaution, especially so early in the year.
That said, I think the emergence of Devin Travis so early in the season, and obviously he's going to regress to the mean. He's not going to flirt with 400 all season.
I don't know about that.
I think he's going to be a 400 hitter.
Yeah, sure. I mean, yeah. Ted Williams, Ted Williams too.
Ted who?
But that's going to come down, you know.
Yeah.
But his start to the season has to be encouraging for the team. And, you know, hopefully when Reyes does get healthy, they can keep Goins around or bring in another piece they feel like they might want to go with more often at that spot and use him more regularly and give Reyes the rest he needs. Because, you know, I think you guys are right. I think you want Reyes, especially on this team, getting better as the season goes on and staying healthy.
Yeah, and as is with any injury in any sport with any team, it's an opportunity for somebody else to step up, and hopefully Devin Travis can continue to do that offensively, and Ryan Gowen's doing so defensively near the bottom of the lineup as well. Talking about some of the new kids, the younger guys, and, you know, Kevin Pillar, I know we've seen a bit of him already, but my goodness, this guy has been worth the price of admission alone. It like last night, he made another diving catch, yeah. And I went into that ball game thinking, when, not if, but when will Kevin Pillar's diving catch come? I mean, he's just been outstanding.
Yeah, he's been so much fun to watch. A real surprise, I think. Heading into the season, I would have probably circled him as the weak link on the starting kind of lineup.
Yeah.
But if he can bring that with his glove, I mean that's going to keep him on this team. It's going to keep even with Saunders coming back. I mean, I guess the question is, you know, maybe Pompey is the guy who loses the spot for Saunders, but Pillar would have been someone in that conversation for me earlier. Now I think there's no question you have to keep him around just for that glove. I mean, and like you're saying, it also drums up, it gives something for the fans to look forward to as well, right?
Yeah, well, and you know, Craig, the stick's been fine as well. He's hitting 279, hitting mm-hmm. 8, yeah, so he's been a guy that's moving things along at the bottom of the order.
Yeah, that's what's amazing for this team is that they've struggled to score runs in a bunch of games, but that 7-8-9 spot hasn't been nearly as bad as people would have said. And, you know, going into the season, the book on this team was that 1-5, 1-6, they were going to be as good as anybody in the league. People were getting, you know, really hyperbolic with it. Is this the best 1-5 ever kind of thing, you know? And as Donaldson and Russell Martin struggled to start the season, those guys actually did. You know, Pompey had he's struggling now, but he actually had a couple of good games. And Pillar batting 280, that's a lot from that guy. That's a lot of that from that position.
And it's interesting because you had people saying, yeah, this is going to be the 1-5, 1-6. This is the best lineup in the majors. 7-8-9, this is the worst lineup. You know, is that kind of like that kind of contrast between the two? And it hasn't played out like that.
No, it hasn't. 5-6 Blue Jays will host the Atlanta Braves at 12:30 along the Sportsnet Radio Network. As we continue Sportsnet Magazine Live, a look at the Stanley Cup playoffs, which has not at all disappointed whatsoever. Every series brings a little something. We'll go over the Stanley Cup playoffs and a lot of Canadian content to get to as well. That's Dave Zarum and Craig Battle. I'm Jeff Sambit, Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Sportsnet Magazine Live with Dave Zarum and Craig Battle. I'm Jeff Sambit, in for Ben Ennis on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Later on in the hour, the NHL draft lottery is happening tonight. Where will Connor McDavid land? Toronto. That's what we're hoping for. 9.5% chance of hope. There's still hope, right, guys? We're in Toronto. We've got to count on hope.
Whatever you need to tell yourself, Jeff.
Yes, I'm talking myself into this.
Whatever will get you through the day.
It's been getting me through the morning. Don't ruin it for me. We'll talk about that later on in the hour. Stanley Cup playoffs do not disappoint, and they haven't thus far. It seems, guys, that every series has its own storyline. It has been fantastic. And after every evening, after every late night, I just try to kind of go home and catch my breath after a very busy evening and night that has been. Every series has been really, really good. And obviously it's very early on to many of the series, a couple of which have only gone one game in. But let's start with some Canadian content and look at the Senators and Montreal Canadiens. And guys, last night, PK Subban returns after being booted out of game number one for his slash on Mark Stone. Max Pacioretty comes back, and immediately both those guys make such a huge impact for the Montreal Canadiens. A 2-0 lead over the Ottawa Senators, and I'm not so sure, as much of a Cinderella story as the Ottawa Senators have been, and I hope I'm wrong, but I don't see the Sens taking 4 of the next 5 against Carey Price.
Yeah, all the hamburgers in Parliament can't save the Sens on this one. Yeah. I mean, against Carey Price to pull off that upset, I think is next to impossible. I mean, anything can happen, but I don't see it coming. I mean, last night the coolest thing for me was imagine if you're Subban on that, you know, that slap shot he fired in there. Imagine the feeling getting that goal, how much momentum you can kind of build off that after everything you went through in the first game. I think the Habs are just going to keep building off of that, and this one's going to be over pretty soon.
I feel like the Senators are just setting up the great storyline. You know, they went down early in the season. Let's say, hey, why not? I mean, Andrew Hammond stopped 42 shots last night. He got the third star in the game. He's still playing incredibly. You know, people counted him out midseason. This is a team that shouldn't be here at all. So getting counted out after two road games, I don't know if we can do that. We all want to see what happens when they get back to Ottawa. The fact that, they've overcome quite a bit already this season. Yeah. I feel like this isn't going to phase them. This isn't going to be the team that's like, oh, geez, you know, we got to win 4 or 5 to get out of here. I think that they're, you know, mentally strong enough at this point to handle it.
Yeah, and it seems to be the growing theme around the country in talking about resilient hockey teams, and the Ottawa Senators, one example of that. I'm not sure they've got enough to come back in this series, but nevertheless. Now, just going back to game number one, because we saw in game number two, Mark Stone had some padding on his wrist.
He also had 2 assists.
And he seemed to do just fine with said padding and said protection. But there's some animosity in this series that just seems to have a bit of everything. Certainly one of the more intriguing, if not the most intriguing series that we can look at. But the Subban slash and kind of the aftermath of all that, do we kind of feel like all that is behind us, that now they go back to Ottawa, the Sens are down to nothing, not so much focusing in on revenge on that, and has everybody kind of moved on from that?
I don't think so at all. I mean, can you imagine the crowd in Ottawa the first time they get to see Subban and the Habs? I mean,
that's
gonna,
true. Yeah.
I think they're going to bring it up. You know, like it's gonna come up.
Excuse me, sirs.
Yeah, exactly.
not a fan of yours, PK Subban.
Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly how it'll sound. Too.
And you're going to know about that with all the booing that you're going to hear.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, maybe the players have moved on, which I don't believe either. But I certainly think the fans haven't moved on. It's going to define at least the first game in Ottawa. You know, and if they lose that, then it gets They have bigger things to worry about, but
absolutely. So that's one series to look at, and of course we've got several. And just kind of keeping up with Canadian content, the Ducks and the Jets, and this for me is one of those. I wouldn't call it a lopsided series, but I think we could go around the room and agree that the Ducks are going to win this series. I'm looking at it as Getzlaff and Perry, and the Jets don't have that star power to keep up with the Anaheim Ducks, Dave.
Yeah, no question. I mean, it's the kind of situation where we were talking about it, like with Anthony Davis, like for the Jets, where they're at in their development right now, this is step one, get into the playoffs.
Yeah.
Now you get that experience of going through a series, of learning what that's like, because it is a whole different animal than anything that these guys are used to. And then you take that, what you've learned this year, and you put it towards next season and next season's playoff run. And then hopefully you can kind of keep building and building until you're in the conference finals, et cetera, in the next few years. So that's kind of where the Jets are in their stages of development. So this is great for their experience, but I think they are clearly overmatched.
I think that's a good description, Craig, of the Winnipeg Jets and where they're at with this franchise and with this year's club.
Right. I mean, we always talk about sort of the club's goals going into the season and how that kind of morphs. But I could really see, you know, Winnipeg fans being just literally ecstatic, like no bones about it, happy to be here. If we get run off the ice, you know, that's okay. Like this is a city that lost its team, that went years without one, that finally got one back, and then actually, you know, had more torment after with just really subpar hockey. Like they've got a good hockey team. They've got a young hockey team. This isn't a team built for one season. It's not like, you know, now that, okay, great, we've got here, but we're losing half the guys next year and half of them are retiring and we're going to have to start from scratch again. This is a team that's going to get better and better. So I think, you know, you're a fan, you can look at it, that building's going to be jubilant for game three. They're going to be super ecstatic to watch their guys on home ice. If they get a game or two, great. But, you know, I don't think a lot of people are giving them a big shot to win this thing. The firepower on the opposite side is just too great. I think this is like you guys said, it's a team on the rise, and they recognize that, and they'll be really just thankful for the playoff hockey.
Yeah, and this is counter to the Jets Ducks series. The Canucks Flames for me is a series that I fully believe is going to go 7 games. And I was talking to Sports Ed's Dan Murphy about this a few days ago, and Dan was saying, you know, if you told me that the Canucks would win this series 4-1, I'd go, yeah, I get that. But then if you told me that the Flames are going to win this series 4-1, you go, yeah, okay, I get yeah. that. It's just one of those series. And looking back at the first couple of games, you can almost describe this series as the Flames stealing game one mm-hmm. and, you know, losing game number two. But, you know, now the Flames go back and they've gotten that game on the road and they could build off of that.
Yeah, and I mean, I think you see also the way the animosity between those two teams, what we saw last night.
Line battle.
Exactly. I mean, that alone, that's why I want this to go seven games. You know, keep that kind of intensity up. It's just amazing to watch. And I, too, can believe it. I can see it going seven games because it just doesn't seem like there's a clear, you know, clear dominant team in this series. I mean, I really personally love Calgary heading into these playoffs. I love the season they put together. I think everyone thought they'd be maybe the worst team in the league. And they've really had guys step up out of nowhere. They got a lot of cool characters. I think it's just a great story. And I always want to root for the better story.
Right.
Vancouver does nothing for me in that department. I don't know. Maybe it's just like a
Eddie Lack could be a good story. Because
yeah, fair enough. You got Lack and him with
that's
his... It's one player.
Outshine the Flames story for me. Yeah, you're right. But
yeah, going into the season, just on the Flames for a sec, we had 12 guys pick who was going to win the Connor McDavid sweepstakes with you know, the worst record in the league. 9 picked Buffalo, 3 picked Calgary. Yeah.
Oh, like, really?
Yeah, 3 guys went on a limb and said Calgary. So
they've since been relieved of their duties?
Yeah, exactly. They're no longer with us. No. This is a team that's fought hard to get here and looks great. On the other hand, you got Vancouver. Vancouver has a lot of urgency here, right? Like the Sedin brothers are getting older. This is a fan base that's used to playoff hockey and playoff flameouts, right? So you can see a lot of sort of anxious feeling in Vancouver. Like they're not willing to be like a Winnipeg happy to be here team. They're not like, oh, yeah, next year it's going to be great. Like that fan base wants a win now. So you've got two teams coming from opposite sides of this thing, even though Vancouver was out of the playoffs last year.
Yeah, and the kids are getting it done. Like you look at Johnny Gaudreau who's getting it done with the Calgary Flames, with Sean Monahan as well early on in his career, and Hudler being in the middle of that as well.
I think, you know, like, again, we don't want to project too far ahead because we're two games into the first round. But next season, I think Johnny Gaudreau is going to be one of the more fascinating players to watch, you know, whether he can keep it up or whether people are going to kind of figure out his game. It's almost like a pitcher going through a lineup the first couple of times where they don't know what he's got, and then they figure it out, and can he still beat them?
But I love the way he's changing he's helping change the thoughts on small hockey players, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, going into his draft year, nobody really was thinking of him as a high draft pick, as a guy who's going to stick with your team. It's like, oh, he's just too small. He's putting up numbers in a bad league, so don't really worry about him. But then he lands on the Flames, and then his first preseason camp, they're like, let's go out and give this guy what for. Let's go out and hit the kid. You know, players came off the ice. He'd gone untouched into a goal. And they were like, coach, we can't touch him to hit him. Like, we can't find him. Like, he's just that fast.
Yeah.
He's that good. So, you know, like, I love that, you know, now that for a guy like, we're going to talk about the Connor McDavid sweepstakes at the end of the hour, but like a guy like Mitch Marner, who's coming in undersized, that suddenly matters a little bit less. Like, Are you swift of feet? Can like you squeeze into like small holes? Do you have good hockey sense? Like, then you can play in the NHL. Like, I like that. I like what the Flames are about, and I like Johnny Hockey. You know,
giving hope to some of the smaller people that are looking to get into the NHL. Now, if we could find a person that makes it into the NHL that eats badly and doesn't exercise, then I've got hope to get into the NHL, and I'm hoping that that's going to be the case. With Craig Battle and Dave Zarum, I'm Jeff Sammet of Sportsnet Magazine live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're talking about the Stanley Cup playoffs and the series that I'm keeping a watchful eye on. And you are the two guys that could see my sweater right now. Of course, I'm wearing an Islanders shirt, and the Islanders and Caps are all tied up at one. And kind of taking a step back and seeing that the New York Islanders give up a 3-goal lead and lose game 2-4-3 to the Washington Capitals, I say, okay, they got a game on the road and got to be happy with that. And they could have very well won game number 2, but they didn't. I just feel like with my New York Islanders, they seem to get in their own way. Like I really thought going into this series that if they were going to lose it, it wasn't so much that the Washington Capitals beat them, but that the Islanders let them. I really feel that. Maybe that's being cocky, especially with the, you know, cheering for the team that's starting out on the road in this series. But that's how I feel about the Islanders.
And early on in that game yesterday, I mean, I was just kind of not amazed, but impressed by how in control the Islanders looked, you know, in game one and then for most of game two until Washington made their comeback. So I wouldn't be too worried Samet as an Islanders fan.
Yeah, thank you.
It's going to be okay, man.
Appreciate
it's
be it. Okay. Can I have a hug? You okay?
Yeah, during the break.
All right. I'll wait.
Okay. But the thing is, like, that comeback did happen. You know, so you got to pinpoint why. And I think you might be dead on where the Islanders got in their own way there as opposed to,
yeah.
I mean, give Washington some due. But,
a little bit.
That Capitals team, I mean, they just, I've never liked the team that they put around Ovechkin ever since he's been there, you know. And I don't think this year's any different. So I don't see them pulling off anything amazing here. I do think the Islanders are clearly the better team. And I think that's how it's going to play out, regardless of last night.
Though I do feel like the Caps did a lot on the blue line this year. They got in.
Yes, they did.
They got in Todd Reardon,
yeah,
the defensive coach. They got in a couple.
Barry Trotz being the head coach, he got everybody to buy in, including Alex Ovechkin, who wasn't a minus a billion this year. So he could score as many goals as he wants if he's a minus a billion.
Right.
You know, they're going to be on the back end of that, but. But he's bought in, and he finally scored a goal yesterday in the playoffs. Hadn't done so since, like, what, 2013 or something like that.
And they got, like, 5 points out of the blue line last night. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they've got John Carlson and Niskanen and Okpozo.
But, like, who's the best player they've ever put beside Ovechkin on that team?
Well, Backstrom. And I think, you know, the knock in game one was that Backstrom didn't have, or Ovechkin didn't have enough time with Backstrom, you know, in game number one. So I think he's a suitable player to have with Alex Ovechkin, the Batman and Robin kind of a tandem. I think he's been good for Alex Ovechkin. Other series to look at, we're only a game in with the Minnesota Wild and the St. Louis Blues, and this is an interesting series, at least for me, from a Blues standpoint, because both these teams want to kind of get over the hump, because it seems like they get into the playoffs and the expectations can be higher. And they fall flat. They don't get as far as they would like to. And I'm talking about both those teams. But from a St. Louis Blues standpoint, it's interesting because if they were to lose this first round to the Minnesota Wild, we could be talking about some big changes. You know, maybe behind the bench with the St. Louis Blues. And I don't know. Maybe from a Toronto standpoint, you're cheering for the Minnesota Wild because you kind of like to see Ken Hitchcock out there.
Huh, that's interesting.
I'm just saying, from all Toronto aspects, maybe that's. That's another candidate you could be talking
about. That's as Toronto-centric as it could ever get.
Absolutely.
But yeah, those are two teams that you want to see them advance around. Like, you want to see both of those teams make it to a conference finals or something like that. And obviously it's not going to happen because they're playing in the first round. St. Louis last year looked like they had it. And this year they've had kind of the same team. Plus they've added, you know, Schwartz has taken that leap forward. Tarasenko's unbelievable to watch. They got the goalies. So...
Their goaltending, I think, is iffy.
But they've
got some star power now up front, which is good for them.
It's great for them. And the goalie thing is, neither guy blows you away, but I wouldn't be surprised to see either of them go on carry a team for at least a series or something like that. I mean, I think there's ability there, if nothing else. If they don't get it done, if they're out of the first round this year, I think you're right. You got to look at making some serious changes, which is too bad because I like the group that they've built. But if they're not getting it done, they're not getting it done.
Yeah.
There's a poor fan base. Last 3 years, they've gotten knocked out by one of the Kings or the Blackhawks, right?
Eventual champions.
Dynasty teams, you know, like at the tops of their game. So it's just, you know, bad luck. This year they get Minnesota Wild, who nobody's afraid of, just the name of the team. But they won 42 games in regulation or overtime this year, just like the Blues, right? Like, these are two evenly matched teams, and they wind up with a tough first-round matchup as opposed to, you know, winning enough and getting 109 points. You're sort of like, okay, we're going to get out of the first round this year. We're on the rise. And then you wind up with a pretty tough matchup.
Speaking of the Chicago Blackhawks in a series with the Nashville Predators, they're all tied up at one after a couple of games in Nashville. And Chicago, it was really exciting to see them win that first game where the Nashville Predators had scored 3 first-period goals. The Blackhawks countered with scoring 3 second-period goals. They had to go deep into overtime, I think a couple of overtimes, and then they won game number one. But Nashville was the better team in game number two. But a big loss for the Nashville Predators could be Shea Weber. That might be out that he got hurt in yesterday's game and had to leave it and didn't come back. So that could be a big loss for the Nashville Predators.
Yeah, it didn't affect them yesterday, but looking forward, I mean, that's maybe your most important player.
Sure.
So, never a good recipe for success.
The Blackhawks, though, Craig, they've got a lot of character. They've obviously got the pedigree. They've been there for a long time, which could work against them. Maybe they've just played too much hockey over a number of years, and that could be the case with the LA Kings that didn't make the playoffs. But with the Chicago Blackhawks, they just seem to find a way. They've been there before. Corey Crawford is a big question mark. Pulled in game number one. In game number two, he allows 6 goals. Are you worried about Corey Crawford, though, at all? I mean, this guy's won a Stanley Cup with the Chicago Blackhawks. I I'm not necessarily worried about Crawford if I were a Chicago Blackhawks fan, as my entire family is. Right. I'm not. I'm the, you know, I'm an Islanders fan, so I'm the guy they make fun of. I'm not worried about Corey Crawford. They absolutely made the right decision in going with Crawford over Darling in game number two.
Yeah, I think they absolutely did. They can't give up on Corey Crawford after one game. Yeah, sure, he got shelled in game one, and they had to yank him. But I mean, he's a proven playoff tested guy. Like, you know, everybody, you know, it's the nature of that position for everybody who's not Andrew Hammond the last like month. Yeah. You know, that you're gonna have bad games, you know, like that you're gonna get beat up, you know, like the clean looks are gonna not be stoppable, whatever. He's a guy who I trust going forward to figure it out, right? And you know, you've just got a really stable team around him. You got Patrick Kane back, you got Jonathan Toews. These are guys who are going to step up in the right moments and help your team win. So you just don't want to rock the boat. You don't want to upset team chemistry. You want to try to stick with what's worked for you and go from there. I think, yeah, keeping things pretty standard is the best thing they can do.
Yeah, the Red Wings with a 1-0 lead over the Tampa Bay Lightning in their series, or what I like to call the Yzerman Bowl, which is really neat. That is a neat storyline. It would be quite a coup for Yzerman to put this in his back pocket and have his new club,
yeah,
if you can still call it that, defeat his former club in the Detroit Red Wings. And the Red Wings, Dave, pulling out a game one victory over the Tampa Bay Lightning. A lot of people had this series pegged as the Lightning winning this one and mm-hmm. going deep into the playoffs. This would be a big upset, I think, if the Red Wings beat the Lightning.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if Detroit will be able to sustain this. I mean, they had a huge game from like their backup, Mrazek.
Yeah.
So maybe he's one of these guys, one of these great playoff stories, a guy who steps up out of nowhere and carries his team. But yeah, like you're saying, Tampa is the team going in that we thought would just kind of cruise through Detroit, and I still wouldn't rule that out. But yeah, credit to Detroit for making what could be a good series out of this one.
Yeah, and I hope they do. Rangers in Pittsburgh, and as an Islanders fan, two teams I could not hate more in the NHL. I hope both of them lose, frankly. I hope this is the first time in playoff history.
Can I ask something?
What's that?
Your Islanders fandom, is this dating back to like the dynasties?
I think I may have ruined it.
Oh, it's right at the tail end?
I did, because when I was a kid, they were the IT team. And, you know, they had a ton of great players and stuff. So my brother got me all jazzed about them. He's a Sabres fan.
Okay.
But he got me all jazzed about them. And so I was an Islanders fan. So I was like, all right, this is going to be the team I'm cheering for. Four Stanley Cups in a row? Yes. I love this team. I haven't won since. So it's probably the Samet curse in Long Island.
Don't be so hard.
So maybe it's me. So I can't stand the Rangers for obvious reasons.
Yeah,
and the Pittsburgh Penguins, you know, there's a long history with them there. Like, I want the Islanders to beat the Washington Capitals so eventually they could beat one of those two teams. Like, because it would feel so...
I've got
that confidence as an Islanders fan. I've never felt this before.
Wow.
I think I'm out of control.
Well, how long has it been since you could say anything positive about an Islanders team?
Exactly. So I'm taking advantage of this opportunity while
the window's open.
Yeah. So Rangers in Pittsburgh, Rangers have the 1-0 series. And look, they had an outstanding year winning the President's Trophy, and Pittsburgh Penguins it took the last day for them to get into the playoffs.
Shouldn't be in the playoffs. I mean, I know, like, you know what I'm trying to say, that they don't seem like
they don't deserve it, Dave. Say
that's
it.
That's the word. They don't deserve it.
Out in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, let's stop crowning the Penguins. You know, this window might be over for them.
How could that tandem of Crosby-Malkin only have one cup?
Yeah, I think, you know, maybe injuries play, like, Crosby's had to miss a bunch of times at inopportune times as well. But yeah, I think we're going to look back. That's going to be a huge what if of kind of this era of hockey. Is how did that team not do what, like, the Islanders did and just win a string of cups with those guys on the team?
I mean, I know it doesn't happen in this day and age. Last time it's happened was the Red Wings, I think 97, 98, I think it was. It was that long ago where the Red Wings did one back-to-back cups. I know it's obviously easier said than done, but I'm just saying that I can't believe that it's been this long that we've had these two players together. They've been around for a long time and they've got one cup.
And it's not going to happen this year either, because the Rangers, I think, are going to just make...
Yes.
Quick work of them.
I believe the same thing. Like with Lundqvist playing as well as he is, and they've got a really deep team. They won the President's
Trophy.
They
look like a finals team to me.
They do. Mm-hmm. They absolutely do look like a finals team. But at the same point, as far as a first round matchup goes, that's like having sort of, you know, you've got Crosby in a series. You know that he can do some amazing things. You've got Malkin. If Marc-Andre Fleury plays as well as he has, not as poorly as he has, because obviously he's been about as up and down in the playoffs as you can possibly manage. And any time they've had a big time flame out, he's been right at the center of it. But if he can put it together, like he had a decent night the other night, like, you know, he stopped 38 shots, right? Mm-hmm. So if he can keep that up, that's obviously a tough matchup for you. You know, like you don't want to be facing the best player in the league in any one series, right?
Mm-hmm. For your listening and viewing enjoyment, what you need to know. Hockey Nation pregame on Sportsnet 590. The Fan here in Toronto at 5 o'clock. Red Wings and Lightning game 2. That's happening 3 o'clock on the CBC. Wild and Blues game 2, 3 o'clock on Sportsnet Ontario, East, West, and Pacific. Pens Rangers game 2, 8 o'clock on the CBC. A Hockey Central Stanley Cup playoffs edition. That's happening at 10 o'clock on Sportsnet Ontario, East, West, and Pacific. Then you got the Jets and Ducks game number 2 at 10:30 on those channels as well. And again, all Stanley Cup playoffs and Stanley Cup final games available on Rogers NHL Game Center Live. And the NHL Draft Lottery is happening. Coverage beginning tonight at 7:30 on the CBC on television. And right here in Toronto on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And that's where we'll go next. We'll talk about the NHL draft lottery and where Connor McDavid might end up. And what happens if he ends up in Toronto? Is that going to be a good thing for him or a bad thing? With Dave Zarum and Craig Battle, I'm Jeff Sammet on Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Craig Battle, Dave Zarum, I'm Jeff Sammet, the Sportsnet Radio Network. Number 97 for your Toronto Maple Leafs, Connor McDavid. Ooh. Oh. Wouldn't that sound good? Connor McDavid scores his 50th goal of the year in his rookie season with the Toronto Maple Leafs.
In 40 games.
Can we? That's right, yeah. Can we dream? Can we do this? Well, we can dream. We can do so at a 9.5% level here in Toronto with the NHL Draft Lottery happening tonight. 7:30, the coverage begins on the CBC here in Toronto on the radio on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So, look, Connor McDavid could be a Buffalo Sabre as of tonight, or at least that first-round pick could go to. Wouldn't it be amazing if the Buffalo Sabres got the first round pick and they went, I'm going to go Jack Eichel? Wouldn't it be? No,
we're going to focus on the blue line. We're going to Hannafin. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Go that way. Let's throw a little curveball. That's okay. We don't really believe in this Connor McDavid kid. Especially after everything that's happened this year, right? With the, you know, Buffalo fans cheering against their that's team right. all year. Oh, you know God. What? Screw you. We're going with Eichel. You cheered against us. That's where we're going. So there is still that possibility that, and it's, look, it's not McDavid or bust, because if the Toronto Maple Leafs ended up with Dylan Strome, I'd be thrilled from a Toronto aspect. He'd be a dynamite to have here.
Totally. I mean, he killed it this year, and he was scoring clutch goals too, not just point totals, but it was when he was getting a lot of those points.
Mm-hmm.
It's a deep, deep, deep pool, especially in that top five, top six. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, McDavid is the biggest difference maker, but that doesn't mean that you walk away with the fourth or even the fifth pick. And it doesn't mean if you land there that you won't walk away with a franchise player. You know what I mean? Like, it's a win-win, I think. If you're in the top five, top four.
Which they're in. They're going to have a good opportunity
isn't
to pick someone
like
great.
1, 4, 5 are the most likely spots?
That's the only spots.
Yeah.
So listen, like you're gonna walk away with a player, like it's gonna help. It's just getting McDavid makes that much bigger of a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, yeah, you know,
obviously,
McDavid is a not just a possible future Hart Trophy winner. He's a likely future Hart Trophy winner, right? Like he is a highlight reel. He is, he scores goals. He makes his teammates better. Like everybody loves him. You know, like he's humble. Like he is the entire NHL superstar hockey mm-hmm. package, mm-hmm. right? So. Great. Like, yeah, like you want him, you're crossing your fingers if you're a Leafs fan or a Coyotes fan or whoever you are. But if you don't get him, one thing the Leafs have struggled to do they haven't been able to find a top line big franchise center. And a guy like Dylan Strome is exactly that guy. You know, he's 6'3". He was leading scorer in the OHL. His brother, like, he's got a pedigree. His brother's currently playing for some little New York Islanders.
With my favorite team, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, like there's a lot to like about a guy like him. But yeah, then you've got Eichel will be off the board no matter what at 4 or 5. That's where you're going. But yeah. they could wind up, you know, with Mitch Marner. We were talking about him before. You know, he's undersized, but he's one of those guys who just gets it. He's super fast and he finds ways to score. And then, you know, beyond that, there's a guy who's a little bit more controversial, kind of in the opposite way of Mitch Marner. He hasn't produced at the CHL level, but he's got everything you like. But beyond that, Lawson Crouse out of Kingston, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, like he's a big guy. He can power his way to the net. You know, he's again a well-liked guy, you know, good teammate. So yeah, you've got players here, might not be immediate impact guys like an Eichel or a McDavid, but these guys are going to help your franchise years from now.
Okay, let's play this fantasy of McDavid coming to Toronto. Let's play that fantasy. Okay, sure. So the Leafs land Connor McDavid. What does this do for the Toronto Maple Leafs' future? Like, this rebuild, what they're in the midst of doing right now, like, everybody's pretty much in a holding pattern to see what's going to happen with the draft lottery tonight. I mean, obviously, it's very early on into some teams' off seasons. So, what do you do? Like, and I'm looking notably at Phil Kessel. You've got Connor McDavid. You're going to draft Connor McDavid. Is the opportunity to see Kessel playing with McDavid just so great that you don't want to do anything with Kessel? Or is the culture so bad with Kessel being one of the key members of that, that you have to get rid of him so he's not with Connor McDavid?
The biggest mistake the Leafs could make if they were to land McDavid is to think that this is going to totally change our rebuilding plans and we can throw away whatever we were planning to do because now we got McDavid, mm-hmm. and then we can just go forward with McDavid and our group from last year. I think no matter what, if they did get that top spot, if they did get McDavid, they still need to go in and clean house. I truly believe that. Just what we saw from that team last year just isn't a good environment to build, to grow your prospects in. I think either way, it's going to be a long rebuild in Toronto. McDavid can make it that much faster, but you still need to clear house. You still need to kind of start anew and have McDavid be the focal point of that, as opposed to putting him in with that current group.
Well, and Brendan Shanahan, Craig, seems hell-bent on sticking with this plan, as he should.
For sure. I feel like the only thing that would be a sticking point in that for me is the market. Like, I don't want to get rid of Phil Kessel and Dion for nothing. Like, I don't want to sell those guys off for, you know, third rounders, you know, 5 years from now. Like, that's not what you want to do. You want to be able to get either young guys or good draft picks back for those guys, because Phil Kessel can score the puck, right? Like, you know, like we've talked about him before on the show, and sort of like a, you know, a Patrick Kane starter kit, you know, like a guy who just puts the puck in the net, and on a different team with a different group of players, he's a valuable piece, you know. But on this team, Cass is number one. He's not it. But so you want to get some value back for him. You want to get some value back for Phaneuf. So, and then I do agree that you don't necessarily want to have those guys around for the long term, but you want to be able to get rid of them at a time when it's advantageous and the market's there for the good return.
Yeah, well, I think you're absolutely right about that. And I think Kessel can excel if he's insulated, if there's mm-hmm. enough of a veteran presence and leadership in the locker room,
yep.
In the dressing room, where he doesn't have to answer all the questions. He just go out and score goals. Just do it and don't be a defensive liability. If he can excel and do that in another market, I think he'd be fine. Like, I wouldn't see Phil Kessel go off and go somewhere else and, you know, he scores 40 goals and go, oh, we could have had that here in Toronto. I'm not so sure about that. I think a different environment for Phil Kessel will be good for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, listen, it's proven that this isn't it. You know, this isn't that environment that's good for him. Regardless of the point totals, I mean, it's just been a poisonous atmosphere and you don't put that all on him, but he's as one of the quote-unquote leaders of the team, he does bear some responsibility in that. Everyone does. Phaneuf does. And that's why I think no matter what, you clear house regardless. I mean, maybe you get lower value than you could have, or maybe lower value than you will if you wait another year. But screw that. Like, let's just get on with it. You know, let's move on. Especially if we're talking about getting a guy like McDavid, you have your building piece. Get everyone else out of there, build around him, and let's start that rebuild. And with a guy like McDavid, like we saw with Crosby, maybe that rebuild might not take as long. But the beautiful thing about this draft is we're all so fixated on McDavid that you have everyone that Battle mentioned earlier, and they're all great pieces to move forward with. I mean, when I look at the draft, I equate it to the 2003 NBA draft, where you had LeBron James, Carmelo Anthony, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, Darko. Everyone was so fixated on LeBron, and for good reasons.
Yeah.
But if you were drafting in that top five, a lot of teams walked away with their franchise players.
Yeah.
Going forward. So let's say you're the Leafs and you get that four spot and you walk away with Dylan Strome. In my head, that's kind of like walking away from that 03 draft with Chris Bosh. Yeah, you didn't get LeBron, but guess what? You turned your team around, you were in the playoffs, and you had a guy you can build around. So yeah, like I see McDavid is LeBron, Eichel is Melo, Strome is Bosh, Lawson Krause is Dwayne Wade, and
someone's got to be Darko Milicic.
Don't even do that to the kid. He hasn't even been drafted yet.
I won't.
And I guess that's the word.
Except it's Noah Hanifin.
I just picked
it at random. Yeah.
That's the brutal thing about any draft, right? Like that, you know, they're banking on getting a key piece this year, and there are going to be guys available that seem like they're going to be that. But at the end of the day, it's a bit of a crapshoot. You're grabbing a guy who a couple of years from now might be ready for the NHL and might be ready to compete. But we've seen it in the past with guys with great pedigrees, great in CHL, great in the AHL, whatever, not live up to billing. So the Leafs are entering a zone where they're giving up a guy like Phil Kessel, where they know what he is, and they're getting a guy that they are projecting to be something, which is scary.
But that's rebuilding.
No, it's absolutely.
You take chances, yeah. and if you make the right decisions, you turn your team around. If you make the wrong decisions, you have to start the process all over again. And the Leafs are going to go one of those two ways.
Like Edmonton did.
You know what what I was thinking about the other day, and I'm not sure you guys would even have an answer to this, but John Tavares really excelled with the New York Islanders under the counsel of Doug Waite, who was a veteran on the club at the time and has become an assistant in the front office and behind the bench as well. So he's always had Doug Waite with him. Yep. And Doug Waite talked about Tavares as this good kid that moved in with him and his family, that played with his kids. I think he was just a good kid and a good guy. And, you know, so Tavares had Doug Waite. Sidney Crosby had Mario Lemieux, moved in with Mario Lemieux. If Connor McDavid came to Toronto, like, who would be the Doug Waite? Who would be the Mario Lemieux? Because he's coming into a situation right now where, I mean, the Leafs are not only gutting their team, like their front office, they got rid of their coaching staff, but, you know, players as well, we don't know who's going to be back.
Could it be Shanahan?
Maybe it could be Shanahan. I think that's he might be too high a profile and too high up in the organization to be that.
Yeah.
But that's not a bad idea.
Listen, if he was going to Buffalo, we all know who it would be. Evander Kane.
Yeah, obviously.
Oh,
yeah.
Right. Yes. You want to be hanging out with Evander Kane. Yeah. Jeez, I'm going through the Rolodex of Sabres as you said that in that millisecond. I'm going, Gilbert Perreault? Like, who would you have? Because, you know, maybe it would have been Brian Trotsch had they not blown out their coaching staff there. But, you know, I just don't know.
It's a good question.
But Shanahan, that's a good answer, though.
But this is a team. Well, he's probably the best answer right now.
Yeah.
Because you just can't count on any of those other guys being around for the actual season. Yeah. But this team has to hire a coach. They've got to hire a GM.
Yes.
They're gonna swap a lot of pieces between now and October next year when they drop the puck. I feel like that's a piece they can't forget. So it's not just about this draft and getting young guys and getting younger. You don't want to be one of those teams with no veteran accountability and a bunch of guys who don't necessarily know how. Because, yeah, like Gare Joyce wrote a good story in the magazine about John Tavares and just sort of the amount that he's changed himself. Like, he took all the sort of criticisms, stuff like that, thanks to guys like Doug Waite, that he managed to, I'm viewed as not the best skater. Well, I'm going to become the best skater in the league, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that I'm going to be a top five, top 10 skater in this league. And, you know, a veteran guy around you to show you that the only way you're going to get there is through working way harder than me, and I'm going to push you. Like, I'm going to work as hard as I possibly can, and you're going to see how an NHLer does it.
You know, it's interesting too, because I think maybe on those Islanders teams, when they drafted Tavares, they could see the picture maybe a year or two before that and think, you know, we got to put ourselves in position to bring on some really young players and have the guys who can nurture them. Whereas in Toronto, that was never the plan until this year, right? They were in their minds building a playoff contender. Mm-hmm. And now suddenly they have to be in a situation to bring on a young guy to develop like that. So whereas the Islanders might have been thinking proactively about it, the Leafs are just out of options and forcing the situation.
Yeah, that's true. From a McDavid perspective, and it's Sportsnet Magazine Live, Dave Zarum, Craig Battle, I'm Jeff Sambit on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We just got a few minutes here, but from a McDavid perspective, Craig, how do you think he handles, if And again, 9.5% chance that the draft lottery goes the Toronto Maple Leafs' way tonight. But if McDavid ends up in Toronto, how do you think he handles the media, the scrutiny, the spotlight that comes, and the pressure that comes with being a Toronto Maple Leaf?
I see him handling it quite well for a couple of reasons. One, he's been under the microscope since he was about, 13 years old, something like that. Like, you know, wherever he's gone, he's had the next Crosby, the next Gretzky hanging over his head, and he's totally excelled. He seems really sort of as comfortable as a hockey player of his age could be in front of the media. The other reason I really feel like he'll do fine here is that he's essentially a deity at this point. You know, like he's the hockey savior in Toronto or wherever he lands. He's going to get a really nice grace period. You know, like I feel like having to deal with the crush of reporters is one thing, but having to deal with a bunch of critical reporters is the thing that seems like it breaks Phil Kessel, right? That,
yeah.
You know, they're picking apart his game and they're asking him what he, you know, well, here, this didn't go well. It was that your fault? Like, he doesn't handle that really well. I feel like a young guy like McDavid coming in, even as good as he is, he's going to be allowed his mistakes. This market, any market is going to accept that, yeah, you're an 18-year-old rookie. You're going to make some mistakes and you're going to have some good nights and bad nights, but you know, you're the future of this team. We really expect you to be an MVP later on.
See, I don't know. That sounds far too rational for me. You know, no. I don't know if...
Here in Toronto or anywhere?
No, in Toronto specifically.
You think they'll expect too much from him too soon?
He said he's a deity. Like, at this point, the expectations couldn't be higher for him. So if he doesn't deliver to that, I don't think it's long before, you know, if he does start slow out of the gate before people start questioning him, just because that's the nature of the kind of 24-hour news cycle, especially in the city. But the thing he has going for him as well, I think, is that... Like, he grew up in the GTA. He knows exactly what the landscape is like. So he's not going to be taken, he's not going to be put off guard by any of it. He's not going to be surprised.
Yeah.
Like, oh, wow, I can't believe there's this much media covering this team.
Yeah.
Like, he knows exactly what he's walking into if that was a scenario. And you would hope, and I assume, he'd be surrounded by people around him who have him prepared for that as well, right?
Yeah. One would think.
Yeah,
I have faith. I feel like, you know, like the old saying, familiarity breeds contempt, right? Like, the you know, Phil Kessel and that same group of people have come up against each other, you know, countless times at this point, you know, like pre-game skates, after game, you know, like they've asked him the same questions over top. Just basically getting asked a question from this crew is the problem, right? Like, it starts right there. But McDavid, as a new guy coming in, I don't think he'll get that. He'll have that same sense of fatigue. There'll still be like, hey, this is cool. People really care about me. People really want to know what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
You know, I think he'll do fine.
Yeah, well, I certainly hope so. I certainly hope that there is the opportunity for him to do fine here in Toronto. Because, again, a 9.5% chance for the Toronto Maple Leafs to get the first overall pick. We'll see what happens.
Really quick, if we see the Coyotes win this thing, are any of us a little...
disappointed?
Skeptical, maybe?
Oh,
a little Patrick Ewing frozen envelope?
Yeah.
Ah, yes.
Saving Canadian desert.
I don't know.
Okay, I'm just throwing it out there.
Mm.
It's another thing to look out for tonight.
That would be a theory that's thrown out there. And you've already done that,
I can't wait.
So thanks for getting that going. Well, we'll see what happens tonight. The NHL draft lottery is tonight. Coverage starts at 7:30. You can watch it on CBC and listen for it right here in Toronto on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Dave Zarum, Craig Battle, appreciate your joining us for this edition of Sportsnet Magazine Live. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Jeff.
Dave, want you to stick around, though, because I've got about a 22-minute version of Sportsnet today.
Beautiful.
And we're going to be talking Raptors and previewing the Raptors and the Wizards. So, Dave, stick around. I'm Jeff Sammet. This has been Sportsnet Magazine Live. Ben Ennis returns next week. It's the Sportsnet Radio Network.